There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
A spaceship on a launch pad.
Lock's tanking secured.
Mission control is abuzz in preparation for the launch.
Her name is the Arrow One. She represents 4.5 years of planning, preparation, and training, and 1,000 years of science and mathematics, and the projected dreams and hopes of not only a nation, but a world. She is the first manned aircraft into space. And this is the countdown. The last 5 seconds before man shot an arrow into the air.
3, 2, 1, 0.
Ignition. And takeoff. The rocket ascends into space. At mission control, dozens of men monitor instruments. The rocket climbs ever higher and out of view. A technician graphs a trajectory which ends abruptly, followed by the word unreported. Two men look at the graph.
I still don't understand how we could have lost it. With all the monitors we have going.
If we had 15,000 monitors going, the situation would be the same. We've lost contact. She's off her vector path. She's off the radar screen. Gone. Completely gone.
When did you first lose contact?
It was less than half hour ago. There was a short period of heavy interference. Now, that was probably solar. We haven't been able to identify it yet. In any case, when it was over, the contact was broken.
Couldn't a change in their course account for that?
The course was preset. Now, the pilot wouldn't change it without notifying us. Bob Donlan's commanding.
So an aircraft with an 8-man crew just disappears like a puff of smoke. One moment she's there, the next moment she's gone.
He walks to a window and looks at the sky.
They shot an arrow into the air. It landed I know not where. Nursery rhyme for the age of space. Gentlemen, wherever you are, God help you.
A man writes on a notepad.
First entry, log, Arrow One, Colonel R.G. Donlan commanding. We have crash landed on what appears to be an uncharted asteroid. Cause of malfunction and ultimate crash, unknown. There was an explosion. The electrical system went out.
That's all any of us remember.
Any of us being Flight Officers Corey and Pearson and Navigator Hudak, who has been seriously hurt, and myself. The rest of the crew, dead. There is very little left of the aircraft. The radio is gone. The bulk of the supplies have been destroyed in the crash. And as of this moment, there is little certainty that we have been tracked and our whereabouts known.
Corey grabs the notepad from him.
Begging the colonel's pardon, but this is no time to write your memoirs.
Corey, we're in bad shape, that's for sure. But we're still a crew. And as long as we are a crew, there'll be discipline and there'll be protocol. Till I'm lying in a hole there, we'll operate from the book.
Corey smirks. Conlon takes back his notepad.
Now get over there and sit down.
Colonel Donlan, it's hot, see? It's very hot. And it makes it hard to think. So if you're going to expend all that energy, you use it to figure a way out of here, a way back, a way to let them know where we are.
Corey! You heard the colonel,
says Pearson. Corey walks away. Donlan drops the notepad. Takes his canteen to the injured Hudak.
Pearson, you were with Corey during the crash. What happened to him?
Nothing that I know of, sir. I can't understand it either.
They lift Hudak's head to give him some water.
How much water is there?
5-gallon can, what we have on us.
Then why waste it? I mean, he's not going to live through the afternoon.
You're the consulting surgeon, Corey?
I'm one man out of three who's going to need water. And 5 gallons isn't going to last very long.
If the situation were reversed, and it was you lying there, I'll give you odds you wouldn't want to be written off. 5 gallons of water or no.
Colonel! This man's gonna die.
If he dies, he dies. But nobody gets behind to push. If he's thirsty, we give him water. If he's hot, we move him into the shade. Then if he goes, we give him a prayer or two. Pearson, start making the graves. I'll relieve you in 5 minutes. Then Corey will relieve me.
Corey looks down at Hudak.
What's the matter, Corey? You want him on the detail, too?
Conlon opens a box.
Colonel, that's odd. Size of the sun, I mean.
Yes, I noticed. It's hardly any different than we knew it on Earth.
Which means that whatever asteroid we've landed on is in the same orbit as the Earth.
Well, wherever we are, it's a cinch it isn't heaven. You can count on that. And get one thing in our favor. The air is perfect. There's no radiation count to speak of. Took 4.5 years to build that ship. There wasn't any prototype. Just the one ship, the only one of its kind. And it took 4.5 years to build her. So, if they know where we are and they want to come and get us, they're going to have to build another ship.
Corey takes a swig of water from his canteen. Conlon and Corey return to Pearson and Hudak.
How is he?
The same. Breathing seems shallower, though. See anything, sir?
Yeah, we saw something. Rocks. Rocks in those scrubby mountains over there. This is no asteroid, it's an 8-ball. And hot, Pearson, hot like nothing you've ever felt before.
It'll be cooler, sir, at night. If there is a night, I'll head south towards the mountains. I'll look in that direction.
Conlon sits down next to Hudak and offers him some more water.
Colonel! Not this time, Colonel. Not this time. I want an even shake. I want a chance.
You're alive, Corey. It's a better shake than those four got.
I want to stay alive, so don't give him my water.
Corey knocks the canteen out of Conlon's hand and it spills on the ground. Corey chases after Conlon and they scuffle on the ground.
Colonel!
Pearson standing up.
You'll be happy to hear, Corey. He's not going to drink any more of your water.
Conlon gets up.
Died a long way from home, Jim.
Corey goes over to Hudak and takes the canteen off of him.
For all the record, Corey, there's just the three of us now. And the big problem's gonna be to stay alive. I mean the three of us. But if I catch you filching just once more, just once, I'll kill you.
The same thing goes for you.
Knock it off, Pearson.
But, Colonel, this
Pearson!
Guy...
Pearson!
Pearson and Corey face away from each other.
All right, we'll wait until sundown. It'll be cooler. Then we're going to start taking some treks. Across the mountain, down the flats, all four directions. We're going to see if there's anything in this godforsaken place that can help keep us alive. This is home now, gentlemen.
A barren, rocky, mountainous landscape extends from horizon to horizon. At night, Conlon sits near a small triangular stove. He checks his watch. Stands up, holding a rifle.
Pearson? Corey?
Corey comes over and falls to the ground.
Well?
Nothing. Not a thing. I must have gone 12 or 15 miles. Rocks and hills, that's all there was, just rocks and hills. Thought maybe I could get some kind of a fix using the stars. But it's overcast.
What about Pearson?
What about him?
You were with him.
He went south towards the mountains. I went west towards nothing.
I told you men to stay together.
Conlon kneels down next to him.
Corey?
Yeah.
You didn't see Pearson or hear him or anything?
I already told you, Colonel. We went in different directions.
It's hot out there, huh?
You know it.
Made you thirsty, huh?
I'm getting accustomed to it.
Obviously. Very accustomed to it.
Taking his canteen.
So accustomed to it that you didn't drink any water. You were out there nearly 6 hours and you didn't touch a drop.
Put me in for a medal.
Buddy, what I'm going to give you can't be pinned on a uniform. I want to know why you started out 6 hours ago with half a canteen and then came back with a three quarters full. Come on, Corey. I want to know where you left Pearson's body and what you did with him. Come on, Corey, come on!
Grabbing Corey and pulling him to his feet.
I found him. Face down. He must have hit his head on a rock.
He was dead.
Where did this happen?
At the foot of the mountain. I had to change directions coming back.
Better change your story.
Colonel, I swear to you I didn't touch him. I found him. He was dead. I saw his canteen. I poured his water into mine. I knew you wouldn't believe me. That's why I told you I hadn't seen him.
We're going to bring him back.
You're out of your mind. It's 7 or 8 miles out there. I can't make it again. I'm dead.
Collapsing to the ground, Conlon pulls Corey up by the collar.
Correction. They're not quite dead yet. All right, Corey. I want to conduct a tour to Pearson's body. I want to see for myself. Move out!
Takes Corey's gun. Corey picks up his canteen and dusts it off. In daylight, Conlon follows behind Corey along a ridge. Hiking up a hill, Conlon uses his rifle as a walking stick. Hiking down a rocky slope, Corey stops to rest.
I can't make it, Colonel. I gotta rest.
They drink from their canteens. Corey tightens his bootlaces.
All right, let's move out.
Slowly stepping through a field of rocks, Corey turns to look back, Conlon still holding the rifle. They reach a shaded canyon. Corey stops.
Well, this is where he was. I swear this is where he was.
And he's not here now.
Look, Colonel, he must have crawled away.
You said he was dead.
I was wrong. Well, I must have been wrong.
But you were so sure he was dead, Corey. You were so positive. Corey, did you do anything for him at all? Did you check him? Did you do anything for him, Corey? Or did you just steal his water and make a beeline back?
I thought he was dead. And I was so thirsty. My tongue was swelling up. I swear my tongue was swelling up.
Pearson!
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 Pearson, it's Colonel Donnellan. Answer me! Pearson! Answer me, Pearson! Pearson, it's Colonel Donnellan.
Conlon reaches Pearson's body. He drops his rifle and goes down to examine the body.
Pearson? Pearson?
Pearson, you're going to be all right, boy. We're going to take you home. Be all right.
What? What are you... You trying to tell me something, Pearson? What?
What are you trying to say?
Pearson raises his head.
What? You went up there? You saw something up there?
Pearson shakes his head.
What?
He draws in the dirt with his finger. Two short lines, then a longer perpendicular. Then he rolls over.
He drew this. A sign or a symbol or something. He was trying to tell us something. What do you suppose he...
Conlon looks up at a nearby mountain peak and walks in that direction. Corey picks up the rifle from the ground, pulls Pearson up by his jacket, then drops him. Sets forth towards Conlon.
Colonel! Two men can live maybe 5 days. One man can live 10. You'll forgive me.
You killed Pearson, didn't you, Corey? You killed him. You're demented, Corey. You're out of your mind. You've already killed once. You've already...
Conlon falls to the ground and rolls down the steep slope. Corey walks toward him, shakes his head.
I'm genuinely sorry, Colonel. I really am. But you brought the book to the wrong place. You brought the protocol, the chain of command, and the numbers, and none of them fit here.
Picks up Conlon's canteen, Seeing the bullet hole in it, he tosses it onto the ground.
You know, Colonel, this is a jungle where only the tough animals survive. And they don't do it according to the rules.
Pushes Conlon over and retrieves his gun.
You know your trouble, Colonel? You were looking for morality in the wrong place.
Takes the rifle, too, and walks on. Hikes up a steep slope towards the ridge. Turns and looks back at his two dead comrades.
Now you make tracks, Mr. Corey. You move out and up like some kind of ghostly billy club was tapping at your ankles and telling you that it was later than you think. You scrabble up rock hills and feel hot sand underneath your feet, and every now and then, take a look over your shoulder at a giant sun suspended in a dead and motionless sky, like an unblinking eye that probes at the back of your head in a prolonged accusation.
Climbing up, now vertically, he struggles to find handholds as the rocks loosen and fall.
Mr. Corey, last remaining member of a doomed crew, keep moving. Make tracks, Mr. Corey. Push up and push out, because if you stop, maybe sanity will get you by the throat. Maybe realization will pry open your mind and the horror you left down in the sand will seep in. Yeah, Mr. Corey, yeah, you better keep moving. That's the order of the moment. Keep moving.
At last, he reaches a narrow ridge. He sits down to gulp down some more water. He looks around at the landscape surrounding him. Onward and upward to an even higher point on the ridge.
Pearson!
He drops the rifle.
Pearson! Oh! Now I know what you meant. Now I know what you were trying to describe.
Utility poles and overhead wires. In the valley, a sign for a motel.
Telephone poles. You were trying to draw telephone poles.
In the distance, a truck passes on a road. Another sign reads, Reno, 97 miles.
We never left the earth. That's why nobody tracked us. We never left the earth. We just crashed back into it. Donlan, Pearson, what have I done? I'm sorry.
He puts his head down on the rocks.
Practical joke perpetrated by Mother Nature and a combination of improbable events. Practical joke wearing the trappings of nightmare, of terror, of desperation. Small human drama played out in a desert 97 miles from Reno, Nevada. USA, continent of North America, the Earth, and of course, the Twilight Zone.
Credits. Directed by Stuart Rosenberg. Teleplay by Rod Serling, based on the story by Madeline Champion. Produced by Buck Houghton. Executive producer for Cayuga Productions, Rod Serling. Starring Dewey Martin and Edward Binns. With Ted Otis, Harry Bartell, Leslie Barrett. Director of Photography, George T. Clemens. Production Manager, Ralph W. Nelson. Art Directors, George W. Davis, William Ferrari. Assistant Director, Edward Denault. Casting, Mildred Goose. Film Editor, Bill Mosher. Set Decorations, Henry Grace, Jerry Wunderlich. Sound, Frank Milton, Gene Valentino. Animated title by UPA. Copyright 1959 by Cayuga Productions, Inc. Filmed at Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios and in the Death Valley National Monument, courtesy of the Department of the Interior. Audio description by Lou Lasher.